podcast where we dissect, we chat about, we pull apart the big meltdown-inducing questions that hit in your 30s, in the hope that maybe by talking about these things, we can learn to navigate them a little bit more consciously, and perhaps all of this won't feel quite so utterly, completely fucking overwhelming. As always with weirdly personal episodes, this is one that was voted by you guys as a topic, and we're going to talk about friendship. Friendship in your 30s gets so weird, and it's so much more conscious and purposeful, and it takes so much more effort because you've gone from having loads of friends at school, having loads of friends at uni, maybe you all went in as graduates to your first job. It was like the world was kind of set up for you to make friends, right? Like you were sat with people in your form, or you were sat with people that you were learning the same subjects with. It was very much a kind of cocoon of friendship. And it feels like maybe a lot of us thought we were really good at making friends and really good at maintaining friendships. And then we get a little bit older and we realize, oh, actually, this is like a massively effortful thing. When you're taking out of that structure that puts you into friendship groups and helps organize your friendship for you, it actually is quite a lot of work. In this episode, I'm going to be unpacking the friendship gap and why our circles shrink in adulthood and why it feels so destabilizing. I also, because this is a weirdly personal episode, I'm going to go into my own challenges and I guess dynamics with friendships in the last few years. What's worked for me, but also some of the research of how to maintain really good friendships and how to make new ones as well. Because I think a lot of us will feel that we either could be better friends, we could have better friends, or that we want to meet new friends. So we're going to talk about how to nurture the relationships you have and how to make new ones that actually stick. So if you've ever felt like your friendship landscape, maybe your WhatsApp, is a little bit emptier than you thought it would be in your 30s, or maybe you're just feeling like maintaining friendships is a lot of effort, then this one is for you. Let's get into it.
If life feels like a whirlwind of clarity and confusion, pull up a chair. Welcome to The Weird Years.
Okay, so let's kick off with why friendship goes through such a massive shift in your 30s. There's actually a lot of research that friendship peaks at 25 and then it starts to decline. And that's in terms of the number of friends that you have in your network and also the quality of friendships. So if you are feeling this way, then you're absolutely definitely not alone. As I said, a massive part of this is this structural change of we've been in situations, often education, which have put us into friendships. And suddenly we're out here as adults and we're on our own. I really like the way that Mel Robbins talks about this. She talks about the great scattering, that as you go through your late 20s, your 30s, and even into your 40s, people start to scatter, and it's driven by lots of different things. It's driven by the partners that people have, often whether you have a partner, whether you don't, whether you fall into the group of, you know, the wives and the husbands or the girlfriends and the boyfriends. It's driven by whether people choose to have kids. That kind of scatters people. If you choose to have kids, maybe you're moving out of the city if you're a city dweller. People have different jobs. It takes some of us abroad. People are just diversifying in their life. Whereas we all used to be kind of doing the same thing. By the time we get to our 30s, there's very many different options of what we can be doing with our lives, right? That is literally the premise of the podcast and the choices that we made. So this kind of great scattering really pushes our network into different places, and it does become a lot more effortful. A lot of us also live in structures which are less community driven. If you're living in the city, you might be in a block of flats, or you might live somewhere where you're a bit more transient. If you haven't bought a home, like myself, we've moved, you know, a number of times across London. We've lived in north, we've lived in east, we've lived in south, and now we're back in east. So there's also this kind of transient nature, which will make it more difficult perhaps to maintain friendships or to have community around you. And the data around friendship and loneliness can actually be really heartbreaking. There's some data that came out from ONS in the UK that said that 27% of 30 to 39 year olds feel lonely often or always. And if you're someone who has really strong connections, then that might be really surprising. But that is the world that we live in at the moment. Obviously, it's exacerbated a lot by things like social media and the digital world. And I'm going to come on to that later, because maybe we've kind of lost sight of that friendship requires effort, but I want to get into that in a whole other section. And if you're going through changes in your friendship, which I'm guessing a lot of you are, if you've chosen to listen to this episode, I just want to acknowledge why it feels so heartbreaking. And I've definitely felt this myself in the last years. And actually some of my like biggest trauma from when I was younger was definitely falling out with a group of friends who were, you know, childhood friends. And by the time we got to 18, 19, those friendships broke apart. And this sounds insane, but sometimes I still dream about those people. Like there's obviously a lot of unresolved trauma and friendship breakdown. But anyway, that's my little dump for you. But we know that it's so devastating because it's so important to us, not just from a psychological point of view, but even from a health point of view. Interestingly, there's this thing called the Whitehall study that's followed civil servants in the UK, 100,000 civil servants. It's a longitudinal study, so it's gone on for many, many years. And it looks at the power of connection and friendship on health, directly on health. So in this study, they account for social economic factors. So they account for wealth, they account for where you live. And even accounting for those factors, social isolation is linked to so many health conditions. It's linked to higher risk of cardiovascular disease, mental health issues, and mortality. So you're actually more likely to die earlier or have severe health problems if you don't have a connective circle. And I don't want to scare you if you are feeling like, oh shit, I don't have this right now, because we're going to go into how incredibly malleable and how these things can change. But I think that's why it feels so deeply devastating. And it's not just from a physical health point of view, it's very much from a mental health point of view. So again, a longitudinal study on aging examined aging and social factors, and they found that regular social engagement, so group activities, friendship, community involvement, it's all associated with increased positive cognitive function and also a lower risk of dementia. So our brains are fundamentally hardwired to be connected. There is a truth that when it comes to being part of the tribe and social connectivity, we are as humans hardwired to do that. It impacts our physical health. It impacts our mental health. It is a protective, they actually talk about it in psychology as being a protective factor against mental health. So it is the cushion that can keep you happier and more sane. And modern life has really eroded this, right? Like, I think the way that we live now, the village, especially if you live in the city, which many more people do than they used to, the idea of the village has eroded in many ways. And, you know, we can link that back to the erosion of the church, whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. But those like regular social ties have been very much eroded in the world that we live in. Our circles have got much smaller. Statistically, this is shown. People have less friends and less acquaintances than they used to. So it's a world that we're all living in, and it's something we have to navigate. I actually always say to my husband that I would love in the future, I have this idea of like a commune where it's all the people that we love. And I'm always like, if we ever won the lottery, you know, I would buy a big patch of land and I'd put houses for all of our friends and we would have dinners together twice a week. And obviously we would live in our own houses and we're not going to have any like weird kind of cultish spiritual beliefs. Although watch this space. I mean, you never know, but and it's funny because we talked about it. We were like, yeah, we'd live in like our own houses, but we might come together and do this. We might grow things, have like a lot of land where we grow some stuff and we'd just be really connected and, you know, raise our kids together. And the people who don't want kids, they would still have like that fun interaction if they wanted it. And then we were like, oh yeah, it's just a village. We're just describing what a village was like when I grew up, especially. I grew up in a tiny little village in Sussex. There's literally one road, 7 different pubs. Everyone knows everyone. When you walk down the road, you know, you went to school with that person. You used to have baths with these people, not in a weird way, but like, you know, back in the 90s where everyone would throw their kids in the bath because it was like everyone was at someone's house and we were all like 5 or 6 being babysat. And then it was like bath time. Anyway, I don't want that to sound weird. But you really like knew the people in your village. And I was like, shit, yeah, that commune that I'm dreaming of is literally just a village. And I think it really harps back to why friendship is so important, because ultimately we put so much emphasis and care and romanticize these relationships that are romantic relationships, right? Like the songs are written about them, the films are written about them, literature about love and lust and commitment and romantic love. But in reality, like the first love of our lives are platonic love. The first love of our lives might be our parents, it might be our siblings, but the ones that we might remember because they're our kind of choice are our friends. Like the first love of our lives are our friends. And if you're lucky enough to move through your life with a solid one or two friends who've come with you for that journey, like the value of someone who has seen you go through all of these versions of yourself and has stuck with you, like, is that not the most beautiful love that we should celebrate? I actually was writing a post the other day about my girlfriends, and I was writing it, and I kind of thought to myself, like, oh, the second love of my life. And if I'm really honest with myself, like, I love my husband to death, but my girlfriends, my close friends, will always be the love of my life. The people that the friendship is conditional, but in a very different way to a romantic friendship is. So that's why it can be so difficult when we move into the stage of life and we're trying to navigate these changes, and often like desperately trying to cling on to these people that have meant so much to us in our lives, and also to build new people, because you don't want to have just had your friends like from when you were younger. And, you know, if you lose some of them, your pool gets smaller and smaller and smaller throughout your life. You want to be replenishing and meeting new people and connecting with people who make sense for you and add value in these new stages of your life as you grow, as you change, as your world changes, right? I've actually just come back from a holiday in Greece where it was friends that, interestingly, are all fairly new friends, apart from one. One I've been friends with for about 10 years, but we live in different countries, so we don't get to see each other that much. She lives in the US and we've traveled together, but we don't get to spend like that much quality time together. And the other two are one, a friend I met only about 4 years ago or so, and one that I literally met this time last year. So I've just been thinking about friendship so much, and it's been on my mind. It's really been on my mind. I've never been someone who was in this like big friendship group. I remember when I was younger, like in my teenage years and actually at university, I used to wish I had that like big group of girlfriends. You know, when you see like the brunch and they're like, you know that they're all like really close friends and they probably went to school together or they went to uni together, and there's like 10 of the girls. Maybe there's some guys thrown in. There might be like the group that's the girls and the guys, and then the girls are a little bit closer. I've never been that person. I've never had like that really big friendship group. And I used to be so jealous of it. And I think now, actually, when I look under the hood, sometimes I'm like, I hear stories of people going away on these holidays with, you know, six friends or eight friends or whatever, who are all from this one group. And I'm like, damn, there's actually always a lot of drama in that. But maybe that's me being judgmental and I'm from the outside. So please feel free to get in the comments and argue with me about that, or share your perspective with me rather about that. But I've always been one of these people who, instead of having this kind of big group of friends, I've had lots of individual friends and I nurture all of those. So it's actually quite a lot of effort, to be honest, because I have, if you look at my friendship group, if you look at who I pulled together for a birthday or a holiday, they will all have come from different places. And I sort of weave them together and knit them together. And honestly, it brings me so much joy because I feel like I've curated this lovely circle of friends. But within that, within it being individual friends, and if you're someone who also does this, you'll see there's a lot of work to it, right? You're not part of a group that kind of self-manages itself and the friendship continues because there's 10 different people planning things and, you know, the birthdays are automatic and the trips are automatic. You do them every year. There's a lot of like individual nurturing. And it's interesting, I recently went through a cycle which I would say was like repairing a friendship. Someone who is also one of my absolute first loves of my life, a friend I've been friends with since I was, God, 7 or 8. She's seen me through so many different parts of my life. And I actually like once wrote a poem about her. Like, I really adore her as a human being. And we were going through a rough time. Like, there was a lot going on in her life, I think. And I felt like I was reaching out and I was reaching out and I wasn't like hearing much. And I guess I kind of got in my ego a little bit about it and was like, well, you know, if she doesn't want to be friends anymore, then that's fine. And I started to back off. And then we had this kind of quite honest conversation about things and got back together. And she sort of shared what had been going on with her and, you know, some of her feelings. And maybe we didn't go as deep, I think, as we could have, maybe. But sometimes it's like knowing where to push and try and understand versus like kind of let go of your ego and say, okay, this thing's happened and let's move on from it. But ultimately, we resolved the friendship and have come back together. But I think there's an acknowledgement that, like, the dynamics have changed. So I guess a learning for me was around how you can have a friendship that's been a certain way for years and years and years, and it can actually, like, change and shift and take a new form of friendship. And then I've also been thinking about friendship because, honestly, when I, like, made the list for my last birthday, I was looking at the people on there and I was like, wow, so many of these people I've only known for like a couple of years. And then they've got a whole other group that I've known for much longer. But I was like, wow, it's really like fascinating to see how new people have come into my life. And the other factor of that, which I've been thinking about a lot, is like connecting friends. It seems to have weirdly fallen as like a new skill that I have of pulling people together and then pushing them off. Not even pushing them off, but, you know, nurturing them to go and have their own friendships without me. And I think that's such a wildly beautiful thing. So anyway, sorry, this is such a massive detour, but I've just been thinking about friendship a lot, okay? And I've listened to what you guys wanted to talk about with friendship. Lots of people dropped me messages, which I really, really appreciate, just sharing how you've been finding things. And the challenges have kind of fallen into three different areas, I think. One of them I called like an effort gap. It's one person is the organizer, the reaching out, the making the effort, and the other is quite passive. And it felt like in my comments and in my DMs, there was this kind of feeling of leading to resentment, which is completely understandable. And then there also was lifestyle misalignment. So people talking about child-free versus people who've got kids, people talking about how, you know, they're traveling a lot and their friends aren't, and perhaps, you know, people don't reach out the same way when they're traveling, this kind of misalignment of lifestyle. And then the other theme that I saw coming through from your messages was this kind of personal growth gaps, or people changing and what their interests are and who they are changing, and that therefore shifting your friendships. So I really wanted to go into some of the research and the thinking of how do you maintain friendships and how do you create new ones? Okay, so let's just have a little truth bomb moment, a little hard word with ourselves, because I think this is so unbelievably true. There's been a narrative online of talking about how self-growth or peace or calm or this kind of like incessant protection of yourself and optimization often comes at the sacrifice of connection. And I want to go into this a bit more. So there's this researcher, she's a writer, she's an editor. Her name's Maybelle Morgan. I hope I'm saying that properly. Pretty sure it's Maybelle. And she talks about how inconvenience is the cost of community. There's actually a really good Dazed article about it. A lot of this article was inspired by, or a kicking off point was a tweet that she saw that I'm going to read to you. It's by Fat Fab Feminist, and it says, "Inconvenience is the cost of community. I quietly repeat to myself as I climb six flights of stairs to my friend's birthday party for her cats." I love that expression. Inconvenience is the cost of community. And the idea that, like, yeah, sometimes it's fucking annoying. Sometimes you are climbing six flights of stairs because your friend is having a bar mitzvah for her guinea pig. Like, people like to celebrate things and it's not always what you want. Maybe it's the hen party, which is, oh, like hours away, and you've got to drive there, and you know that it's going to be not really your cup of tea, or it's the baby shower is another one, and you know you're going to be opening up nappies and looking at different types of chocolate bars inside them. And I'm so sorry if any of my friends, I've actually only been to one baby shower, and I think we did do that, it was about 7 years ago, and it was horrendous. It was absolutely not what I want to be doing. I promise I would never make my friends do that. But the inconvenience of, I don't really want to do this, or you live on the other side of London, or I have to take a flight and I can't really afford this, but I guess I kind of can. That is the inconvenience, which is the cost of community. I just love someone laying that out on the table, because it's like, yeah, you can have a really convenient, lovely, soft life where you do everything on your own terms. And you only go to the events that you actually want to go to. And you only go to the things that are close to you. But that choice of convenience will sacrifice you friendships and sacrifice you community. And I'm not talking about like, oh, you know, be sacrificial. Is that the word? Sacrificial, yeah. Don't be sacrificial with your time or money. Don't burn the candle at both ends in terms of going to every single thing that you have to go to. But just be aware that showing up in a friendship, like, yeah, that's sorry guys, that is part of the deal. Like, if you want close friends and a support network, you have to sometimes do things that you don't want to do. That is just how it is. Weird events. Maybe you have to go to someone's moon circle. I actually don't know what that is, but if someone has a moon circle, I'll probably be quite into it, to be honest. Or you're helping your friend move house. It's fucking annoying. It's boring. But showing up for people, it does matter. Maybe it's traveling all the way across London when you're hungover as hell, but your friend has been dumped. And the difference between showing up there versus like being there on FaceTime would move mountains for them. This is the toll that we have to pay for loving people and for being loved. So I just want to set that groundwork. You might be sitting here thinking, well, I do all of that stuff anyway. Or you might be sitting here and being like, huh, I am a little bit guilty of that. I'm actually guilty of that because I was supposed to see my siblings on Sunday, but my brother lives in an hour and a half across London. It's 3 hours of travel. And I was like, oh, I have so much to do. I can't really do 3 hours of travel to then hang out for a few hours. But maybe I should, because maybe that is the cost of siblinghood. So yes, I just wanted to throw that out there as like, it's a hard pill that we all have to fucking swallow, because you can't have just friendships on your terms. That's not how friendships work. They're a relationship, there's give and take. And sometimes you will have to miss your morning Pilates class at 8 a.m. because you will have to go to ABBA Voyage with your friend dressed in 80s sequins, even though you hate a dress-up party. You will have to go and you will have to be hungover and you will miss your morning Pilates class because that is the cost of the friendship. So sometimes with navigating existing friendships or new ones, actually, you have to decide how invested you are in the friendship. Like, how much energy are you willing to put in? And also, how much of your ego are you willing to sacrifice to maintain the friendship? You might get pissed off that you're the one who reaches out again and again and again. And maybe you feel like, oh, I always text them and they never text me. And sometimes that you've just got to let go of that. I used to be so guilty of this. I felt like I'm the organizer in a lot of my friendship groups. And actually, like, I do have a few friends. There's two amazing, well, many of my amazing friends, actually, who I think it's really shifted in the past year or so, reach out a lot to me. But before, I always felt like it was me being like, do you want to go for dinner? Do you want to do this? Do you want to do this? And they would always be like, yeah, let's definitely do it. But something in my ego was like, well, why am I the one to always reach out? And then I realized, that's because it's your personality, babe. Like, you are type A as fuck. And you are planning months in advance. And you are doing this. And like, some people just aren't built that way. Like, you can't control always how people, you know, navigate their own friendships. So just be conscious, I think, when you're thinking about nurturing and creating friendships, like, know how much you're willing to invest in each friendship. And know sometimes when you need to pat your ego and just say, calm down a little bit. So far, there's a lot of this has just been like my experience. So I wanted to look at some of the research as well, or some of the opinions out there on friendship, right? There's this lady called There's this girl called Danielle Bayard Jackson. She's a friendship coach and she's got a book called Fighting for Our Friendships. And she talks about what makes a good female friendship. And I thought these were really interesting. She defines it into three different things. So firstly, symmetry, feeling equal to our friends and in balance, is an important part of friendship in her definition, that there is an effort symmetry, that there is a level of commitment symmetry, that no one is putting themselves out there more than the other, that it feels like a good and take, give and take, sorry. And that doesn't mean that, you know, you're the first to text this time, I'm the first to text this text next time. It's just like a balance that weighs itself out over time. Her second one was support. So emotional support and help, that there is like a good amount of that within the friendship. Makes sense, right? And the third one that she defines is secrecy, that they hold a level of exclusivity which makes the friend closer to you than to others. And at first I was like, oh, I really don't like that secrecy. It feels like exclusivity. It feels like things that in my, personally, in my friendships, I'm very much not defined by that. I love like bringing everyone together. I'm so happy if my friends go off and do things that I don't want to do without me. Totally fine. But the other way I thought about that is like vulnerability. Like, actually, is secrecy, if you reframed that, is it vulnerability? Is it that there is a level of, you know, things about me that not everybody knows? I think that is maybe a nicer reframe on it, and is really important, of I share things with you that I don't share with other people. So just to recap though, it's like a symmetry of equality of balance is a key factor. Support, so whether you're helping and supporting that person emotionally, and let's say vulnerability, those three things are really crucial in maintaining female friendships. And I think she got it pretty spot on. So how do we actually put those things into practice and maintain our friendships? Well, as I said, one of them is when you come across conflict, think about how much you're willing to invest. How much is, you know, I will push and push and push because I really care about this friendship and I'll let go of my ego because it's worth it. Really keep that front of mind when you're coming across friendship challenges. The other thing is like open conversations. I think that the more honest and open we can be, especially now, like we've all got our developed prefrontal cortex at this point, guys. Like we are old enough to sit down and have the hard conversations and put our big girl pants on and actually talk about things. It's one of the beautiful things that we're really good at that men aren't, is like thrashing it out, being honest and healing from things. So if you feel like things are weird with a friend and you want to maintain that friendship, have the fucking conversation, ring them up or see them in person. Actually see them in person. I would say that IRL is definitely another strand of like, you have to maintain your friendships in person. It's difficult. People live in different places and, you know, the world is busy, lives are busy, but you cannot replace deep conversation, eye contact, face-to-face, body language. It cannot be replaced by Instagram likes. And like, you know, you might have a friend that you talk to all the time on Instagram. You're sending memes back and forth, back and forth. It will not be the same as when you sit down in a room with that person and look in their eyes and really get a sense of how they're feeling and reading their energy. So think about that when you're maintaining friendships. Like, how much are you willing to put in? How can you have really open, honest conversations? And how can you do that often in the real world, IRL? There's also this concept that I like to think about of, maybe when we're younger, we have this idea of like, I'm friends with this person or I'm not friends with this person. But I really like this concept from Charmadine Reed, who talks about like your front row. And it's the people that you put in your life who are, if you imagine you're in a theater and you've got the front row, it's the people that who you look out to and you see, and they are like your number one supporters and really close friends. And I don't mean this in a like, you're my best friend way, because I think some of the people who have the healthiest friendship groups, it's not like that possessiveness maybe that we have when we're younger, but you look out and you see your front row and it's like, these are the people who are your ride and dies. And then the next stage back is like, you might have the people who you could call in a crisis, but they're not necessarily like your day ins, day outs. And you might have some people the next row back that they're people that you love to have dinner with a couple of times a year. And then the row back again, which might be friends of friends. Again, you really enjoy. Just think about your friendship as a theater. And honestly, like I've done this before, which if you're my friend, you'll be like, you're a fucking psycho. But live, let me live, you know. I've before mapped out at different points in my life, like who are my front row and who are the other rows? And it's not about ranking friends. It's about in your head, just thinking about like the friendships and what you need to do to maintain them and being conscious. Like all of this is just being conscious of how can you give enough to get what you want, give enough so that you have that community. So that when, you know, if you haven't given enough to your friendship circle, when you are in the shitter, there's not going to be anyone to speak to. So it's a give and take always. But what I love about this analogy, she talks about your front row rotation. So she talks about how these people who are in your front row might not always be in your front row. And that's okay. It's not that, oh, we're not best friends anymore, I don't want to be your friend. Push them out the exit, take away their ticket, no readmittance to the theater. It's not that. It's you might push them back to a second row because at that point in your life, you guys just aren't gelling in the same way, or you don't have the time at the moment, or they don't have the time at the moment to maintain that level of friendship. So I love this idea of like friendships being cyclical, and you don't have to throw someone out of your orbit. They can be there, but the relationship might change. And I think getting really comfortable with differences and comfortable with change and letting go of any possessiveness or fear or insecurity you might have will immediately help you maintain like better friendships with the people that you have around you. Okay, and then the second half of this chat on friendship that I wanted to go into is new friends. Because what a beautiful thing to be making new friends at this point in your life, in my opinion. I really like, again, Mel Robbins. I'm a Mel Robbins girl often. I understand she's American. I understand she's a little bit annoying sometimes, but she has some really good philosophies. I'm not going to go into the let them, just let them. If they want to punch you in the face, let them. I'm joking. I'm not going to go into her let them philosophy because I just, there's too many nuances and flaws in there that I can't cope with. But she has this idea of three pillars of friendship. So if you're making new friends, this is how you can think about, okay, how can I go about making new friends? That's the question. Title of the essay, how do you go about making new friends? Here's my research. There's three things that matter. One is proximity, how physically close you are to each other. If you want to make a new friend and they live in Scotland and you live in London, you can be friends, absolutely, but you might not be the closest friends because physical proximity really matters when it comes to making friendships. That's why when you sit next to someone in the class, when you're a kid, when you're on the same sports team, when you are working on a project together at work, physical proximity breeds friendship. The next one is timing. So are you at a timing in your life which makes sense with the timing in their life? If you are 25 and the person you're trying to be friends with is 45 and they have two kids, it might be that your timings don't align so much and your lifestyles are really different and becoming friends will be difficult. And when I say your lifestyles are different, I don't mean that in terms of social economic factors or in terms of your backgrounds. I mean that literally in terms of like how you are using your life and your time and the commitments that you have in your life. Timings will be a factor. And then the third one is energy. Does this person match you on an energy that you want to be in at the moment? Let's say you meet someone who could be your friend. They live 30 minutes away from you on the tube. Great. We love the proximity. They have a similar timing. They might be 5 years older than you. They might be 5 years younger, but you're kind of going through the same stuff in life. Fantastic. Amazing. But then there's the energy. You cannot make friends just because the other boxes are ticked. There has to be this like energy pull. And I understand sometimes I talk about energy and it gives people the ick, but there has to be this immediate like, okay, we vibe. And I can be weird on this. Like actually one of the girls I just went on holiday with, we met in November last year. We met at a co-work day. We kind of chatted in a really big group, but I just felt like there was a like an energy there of like, okay, this is someone I can very much be on a wavelength with. So I just asked them, my husband had a gig coming up and I said like, oh, do you want to come to the gig? And they were like, yeah, I'll come along. And I was like, great. She didn't know anyone. She literally knew no one who was going to the gig. So I introduced her to all my friends, like difficult place to meet new people, by the way, like at a techno gig, it's obviously loud as fuck. But I pushed myself out there and was just like, hey, come to this thing. I'd like to get to know you better because like the energy just kind of felt good. And now a year later, we just spent a week together in Greece. And like, she's someone who I really, really value and look up to and respect and love spending time with. So keep energy in your front of your mind. And sometimes you'll meet someone and you're like, oh yeah, like on paper, we should really be friends. It's a bit like dating, right? On paper, we should really be friends, but like, it just doesn't feel right. And that's also completely fine. Don't force yourself into new friendships. Even if you're feeling lonely, don't force yourself to align to an energy that doesn't align to you. So if we're thinking of making new friends, we're trying to make friends, really think about proximity, life timings, energy, and see if you can choose places to meet friends based around those factors. And then there's also this theory that I really liked called the weak ties theory by a guy called Mark Granovetter. Granovetter. Maybe he's Dutch. I actually don't know. But he talks about this weak ties theory because psychologically, and this goes back to actually the studies I mentioned at the beginning of this episode, even loose acquaintances, they boost happiness and belonging. You don't need necessarily like 10 besties. You can have like loose acquaintances and you will feel happier. You need a kind of web of connection. And I think that's what's massively changed for me in the last probably year. I've started going to networking things. I've started to just go to more events. And it's like, there's people now who I'd have dinner with who maybe I'd have dinner with them like a couple of times a year. They're kind of in that web of connection, but I enjoy them enough that I would get a group together and we'd do that. Or You know, I might see them one-on-one for a coffee. I know they're never going to be my besties, but that doesn't mean that they're not a valuable connection. I think getting out of this idea that maybe is a little bit immature, to be honest, of like, well, I only need a few friends. Like, I just have my ride or dies. It's like, well, no, you actually do need a web of connection. Psychologically, it would be better for you if you had a web of connection. So to wrap this up, if you're feeling like, yeah, okay, I need to go and do all these things and I understand that, but like, where the fuck am I meeting these people? Let's finish on that side, shall we? Okay, so navigating this gap of where you are now versus the network of connection that you want to have. We've talked about nurturing our existing friends. They're nurtured. Let's imagine their cups are full, they are watered, their roots are growing into the earth. How do we meet new people? Rituals over spontaneity. And I would say this in dating, guys, we're actually going to borrow a lot of things from dating, which are exactly the same if you want to meet friends. The idea that you will walk into a bar and meet the perfect guy in your 30s, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. It's why meeting people when you're 22 and you're in a new job, or you're meeting people when you're at university, is so much easier, because you're forced into one space where it is built for you to meet people. You need to find that for friends. Ritual over spontaneity. Do not expect to meet a friend through a bar or, you know, walking along the street at the coffee shop. It's probably not going to happen. You need to go to places which are ritualistic. So places you go often. This could be a walking club. This could be a sports club. Something that maybe for some of you, this is church. It's not for me, girl, but not even church. It could be the synagogue. It could be the mosque. It could be the temple. It could be any non-religious or religious denomination of your choice, but something which is ritualistic. It could be a yoga space. Go somewhere where you are frequently put in a situation where you see people over and over again, and that breeds a level of community. Even like, we've talked about this previously on the podcast, there's a great episode with Daisy where we talk about friendships in flux. It's the name of the episode. And we talk about micro connections, and we talk about it being a muscle that you have to flex, of like just chatting to people. But if you put yourself in these ritualistic places, and then you just have to push yourself a little bit to, we all go and do yoga in a room together because we want to be together. We could do yoga at home, but we do it together because we want that connection. So, you know, ask the girl where her leggings are from, ask them what they're doing at the weekend, make an effort to spark up conversations in these ritualistic spaces. And on a similar vein, invest in those weak ties. So that theory we talked about, Mark Granovetter, invest in those kind of like people who might not be the best friends, but they are the people who can create this web for you. Invest in them, have conversations, make the small talk, make the effort, chat to neighbors, colleagues, chat to people at the gym, because you never know where those relationships will go. And it could be that they just become like part of your web and they maintain. But it could also be that actually there's people all around you that are really similar to you, that match you in terms of those factors of location, that match you in terms of energy, that match you in terms of life timings. And they're actually sat all around you and you just haven't realized yet. And then we have to get organized. I'm going to read this list to you because I curated it myself and I think it's quite good. This is quite London centric, so I do apologize for that. But a lot of these places are actually also regional. So treat making friends with intentionality. You cannot just bump into the friendship of your life walking down the street and have a 2-second conversation and be like, we're going to be friends forever. So where can we make friends? I'm going to reel off a whole lot. Bumble BFF. It's an app. Download it. It's not just about dating. You can meet friends. This is not sponsored, but if they'd love to sponsor me, I'd be so fucking open to that. I'd take any sponsor I can take at this point. Meetup. I know the website is jank. I know that there is 1,000 weird meetups on there that you don't want to go to, but spend some time on there and you might find a meetup group that you actually want to go to. There are a number of supper clubs, dinner clubs around London. Sometimes they're in people's houses. Some of them are in restaurants. They're kind of organized by platforms where they put people together who might get on. Ones that I've heard of are Orator's Dinner. They are focused, I think, more in kind of people who are creatives or freelance or running their own businesses, but really good way to meet people. You go together for a dinner. They curate the people who are going. They choose the place. They book it. You turn up. Great. There's another one called Time Left Dinners, which is same concept, but it's a little bit less strict on who can go. Anyone can go to them. So get on that. We the Conscious is an amazing studio in Hackney that does all kinds of things. It does yoga. It does aerial yoga. I did there. It'll do like manifestation sessions there. Lisa, who owns it, is fantastic. They do walks. I think they're monthly. I want to say they're monthly, but have a look at them. There's community saunas. Community saunas are underrated. My favourite is Arc Community Sauna in Canary Wharf. But they have community sauna and they have also community ice plunge. And it's a really good way to meet people. The one that I really like, Arc, is because you do like meditation in the session. And also they talk about, like, they'll have questions and people kind of have a sharing moment at the end. So it's really nice to meet new people. It's very much community minded. And then we've got two more. We've got Park Run. Again, ritualistic. You will meet people based on your own hobbies if you love to run. And there's one called Lonely Girls Club as well, which, find them on Instagram. They also do lots of events. I should actually say the Time Left thing. I put Time Left Dinners because that's what I'd heard of the most. But actually, I think Time Left do shitloads of different events. So I will drop those in an Instagram post. Come over to Instagram and have a look. But we have to be intentional. We have to treat friendship like it is dating. And it's not as toxic and it's not as disgusting. So hopefully we'll enjoy it a little bit more. But there's a whole load of places that you can go and seek friendship if you're feeling like you want to expand your network. So that is honestly all I have to say on the topic. If your friendship circle is feeling smaller, it doesn't mean that you are failing as adulthood or something is wrong with you. It means that life is shifting and it's going to happen to all of us. We are going to go through ebbs and flows and tides and lots of different ways that friendships flex throughout our lives. And yeah, not every friendship is meant for every season, and that is okay. Sometimes friendships are cyclical, I don't know, like the seasons, and they come back around. Sometimes they're not. Sometimes you're supposed to have a friend that's really, really intense for a couple of years, and then you're supposed to drift apart. That is the journey. Just remember, it means life is shifting, things are changing. That is life. We can't hold on to things. And you can, through some of the things we've talked about, through intentionality, through effort, through thinking about things and confronting them head on, you can nurture the relationships that maybe feel like they're at risk of failing or that could be so much bigger and bolder and more important in your life than they are now. And you can also make new friends. Like, there is nothing wrong with you. You can go out there and you can meet new people. And hopefully some of the stuff that I've shared in this episode is useful. I do always feel like these solo episodes, they've taken a bit of a turn. They're actually, dare I say it, a little bit helpful. If you've enjoyed this, please do let me know. Please drop me a little comment. Please share it to somebody who you think might find this useful. And I will be back with a Weirdly episode next month. And in the meantime, loads of great new guests joining me on the couch, which actually is not going to be a couch anymore. But that is a story for next time. Thank you for listening, everyone, and let's chat soon.